This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about local government. What does it mean to be a good Democrat these days? Let's talk to Senator Tommy Tuberville, and China's already mad at us? Coming up on I'm Right. What does it mean to be a good Democrat these days? Well, that's a fascinating question to ask, and one that we're actually seeing play out in front of us with what's happening in New York City. Now, stay with me. Whether or not you're in the Big Apple, this will apply to you. Let's start back in kind of the beginning. Eric Adams. Eric Adams is current mayor of New York City. Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York State, is reportedly seriously considering removing him as mayor. Very odd law they have in New York allows her to do such a thing. But let's rewind, like I said, and talk about how all this began. Eric Adams was elected in New York City as, look, whatever he is, I'm not an Eric Adams fan, he was elected as kind of the anti-Bill de Blasio. Remember Bill de Blasio, that big commie goober who just tore New York City to shreds? I personally, over de Blasio's time as mayor, went to New York. I always go to New York City. I have to go for work all the time. I watched New York just steadily just go down the longer de Blasio was there. Remember, the cops hated his guts. The cops really, really hated his guts. And so New York, this is a moderate selection for New York, picked Eric Adams, former NYPD cop, thought to be more pro-cop, but definitely, he's not Bill de Blasio. Again, he's not my guy, but he's not Bill de Blasio. Eric Adams gets in there, does his thing. And then the Biden administration did, well, what horrible anti-American communists do. They not only opened up the border, they used your money to bring in as many foreign barbarians as humanly possible. And of course, originally, you'll remember this, originally they had just tried to stash them in the reddest states or the border states. Hey, just leave them all in Texas. But to his credit, Greg Abbott really was the pioneer on this, and Ron DeSantis did it as well. They figured out, hey, we can just ask these people if they'd rather go somewhere else, and if they say yes, we can ship them there. They started shipping illegals into New York City. Well, cities are not the country. They can't print money. Cities, especially New York, since it's on a freaking island, have limited room, limited resources. And if you're a mayor of New York City, of any town, small town, big city, if you're Eric Adams, you want to do things during your time as mayor. You want to be remembered. You have that city budget. You want to figure out, I want to put in an ice rink here, the Eric Adams ice rink. They'll always remember me for that. I have no idea whether or not he wants an ice rink, but that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of way you think when you're the mayor. Except you're starting to have to house all these illegals. Starting to have to feed all these illegals. You're watching crime go through the roof, and not only are all these things happening, Eric Adams was elected in large part because the black community of New York City came out and supported his run for mayor. Well, like we've talked about many times before, it's not just the hotels. Where are they putting most of the illegals in these big cities, the Chicagos, the New Yorks? They're putting them in the black neighborhoods. Why? Because those are the poor neighborhoods. That's where you can stuff them in the gym, stuff them in the crappy school, have a good time. Long story short, Eric Adams starts to get chirped at out in public. Starts to get some pushback. Eric Adams decides, I'm not going to just hand over my reputation as mayor to the Biden administration just so they can burn down America. And it was a little forceful, I guess, but it's not as if he was belligerent, started speaking out publicly.
The city is being destroyed by the migrant crisis.
This is in the lap of the president of the United States. The president and the White House has failed New York City on this issue.
Okay. Now, that's a call out for sure. It's not calling Joe Biden every name in the book. He said, hey, we failed New York City. You failed us on this issue. He understands that. Well, the Biden administration did something next, and it's very difficult to give them the benefit of the doubt. About 5 minutes after Eric Adams started speaking out, the Federal Bureau of Investigation descended on Eric Adams like a Mongolian horde. Immediately, we're told there were corruption charges. Corruption, they love saying that. And let me be perfectly clear about this. Maybe there were. I mean, he's a New York City politician. There probably were. I don't have any idea the validity of the charges. I don't know. You don't know. No one knows. But if you're the Biden administration and you already have a record of setting the FBI after your political opponents, you've raided Mar-a-Lago, you've arrested pro-lifers, you sent the counterterrorism division after school board moms because you wanted them to quiet down, you were hardly going to get the benefit of the doubt when the mayor of New York City complains about you publicly and then the FBI shows up at his doorstep. It looks political, probably was. Even if the charges are legit, it probably was political. But then Eric Adams, pretty crafty move. Eric Adams starts to read the tea leaves. Sure, the Biden administration's after him. Sure, the FBI's after him. But these poll numbers for Donald Trump are looking real good. Looks like Trump may be 47 after all, meaning may get another time in office. So Eric Adams reportedly goes and meets with Donald Trump, starts to speak kindly with Donald Trump, does a sit down with Tucker Carlson. Donald Trump does win the election. And Eric Adams is now best buddies with Tom Holman?
I came to New York City. I wasn't going to leave without nothing.
Right.
I did the last time, and I told him, I'm not leaving until I got something. And right. We're back into Rikers. That's huge. But we got other things we're working on. So I'm hoping. And now I got him on the couch in front of millions of people. He can back waving us now, right?
You Fox are sitting friends. Today talking about the new alliance between ICE and Adams. So thank you very much for
thank
coming.
You
and
so thank you.
The alliance was never severe.
Yeah, and if he doesn't come through.
Make it. You're up early anyway.
If he doesn't come through, I'll be back in New York City.
Right.
And we won't be sitting on the couch. I'll be in his office, up his butt, saying, where the hell is the agreement we came to? So
right. And I want ICE to deliver. And I want ICE to deliver. We're going to deliver for the safety of the people of this city.
So now they're chummy. And just like that, the charges have been dropped. Very clearly, a political decision has been made, a political alliance and agreement, if you will. Donald Trump gets some ICE enforcement in a city overrun with illegals. Donald Trump gets a political ally in a city and state where he has a lot of very legitimate political axes to grind. Eric Adams gets to not go to prison. And we're all off nice and clean. Now, that's the backstory. But there's something Eric Adams came out and said about his interaction with the Biden administration that I thought was, and it was a throwaway line. It was a few weeks ago he said this. But I thought it was just so incredibly revealing. Is what he said about
it. I spoke with the president himself. I spoke with the president first. Then the president came here to New York City. The governor and I sat down with the president. And I said, Mr. President, I'm not sure what they're telling you about this problem, but this is a terrible problem that's playing out on the ground that we need to fix our border and we need to just stop allowing people to come into the country with no destiny.
And so you tell the president and his aides this, and what do they say?
Basically, be a good Democrat, Eric.
Be a good Democrat?
That was the basic overall theme. You know, one of his aides told me that, listen, this is like a gallstone. It'll pass.
What? It's like a gallstone, it'll pass.
Yes. It'll hurt now, but it'll pass.
Well, you pee it out then. Right. Why do you have to?
Well said.
Be a good Democrat. That actually brings me to my point. The Democrat Party will come back. They will. They will. It doesn't look like it right now, which we'll get to in a second, but eventually they will. But where are we as a country when being a good Democrat means you have to be okay with filling up the country with barbarians? Is that where we are as a country? Because if it's where we are, then we are in very, very serious trouble. Extremely serious trouble. In fact, look at Boston's police commissioner.
You know, in the Boston Police Department has pretty defined rules set by the law, and we abide by the law here in the state, and we don't, enforce civil detainers regarding federal immigration law. It's, you know, it's defined here in the state, and that's just how it works.
Well, you've lined up the state. How do you navigate the difference between the state,
the city of Boston, and Washington, D.C.
And so I can't, you know, it's hard enough to run the Boston Police Department. I could never fathom, you know, running outside of that. So I do know this. Our officers are, you know, abide by the laws here in the state and certainly the city ordinance in the city of Boston. We don't have authority to enforce federal immigration law. And so from our perspective and what we tell anyone who comes to visit our city, lives in our city, is that we don't care about your immigration status.
That, of course, would be a good Democrat. Where are we as a country when we have two major political parties, and in order to be in good standing with one of them, you have to believe in the open border importation of barbarians, rapists, and murderers? I know we're all excited right now. I'm excited right now. I'm excited about the Trump administration. I'm doing backflips about the things I've seen. I've never had a month where I've done this much smiling about politics in my entire 43 years on the planet. I'm happy. But I can't stop thinking about where we are as it pertains to the Democrat Party, because although I am not one and will never be one, the truth is, in order to continue for another 100 years, 500 years as a country, we have to have a Democrat Party that is not what it currently is. We can't do this thing every 4, 8, 12 years where we import 20 million barbarians and then continue on as a country. It won't work. We won't be able to deport fast enough. The Trump administration is not deporting fast enough. It's not humanly possible. So to be a good Democrat now means to hate your country. I hope that changes. And until that changes, I hope the American people recognize that and completely reject this party and burn it to ash. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk to the coach, Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama, in just a moment. Before we talk to Coach, let me talk to you about your cell phone service. Let's save you a little bit of money, but more importantly, let's put your money where your morals are. Your money should follow your morals. It should. Now, that can be very, very difficult in this corporate environment we live in where everything's Pride Month. But with your cell phone, there are no excuses. You do not have to have Verizon anymore, AT&T, T-Mobile. When Pure Talk's on the same network, same premium phones, half the price, why aren't you switching? And they share your values. They promote your values, veteran values, American values. They hire American. I love that. I love that when I talk to Pure Talk, I speak to an American who speaks English, because they hire Americans right here at home. Dial, or here's what you do, puretalk.com/JesseTV. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
There's one confirmation still outstanding. There are more than one, but there's one big one we're all waiting with bated breath to see, and that's the confirmation of Kash Patel as FBI director. We know at least a little bit of what's gone on inside the Hoover building, and what we do know is horrific. Is Kash Patel going to get in? When he gets in, is he going to be able to clean any of it up? I don't know. Let's ask the coach about it. Joining me now, a great senator from the state of Alabama, Coach Tommy Tuberville. Coach, Kash Patel, is he getting in this week? Let's start with the basics.
Yeah, I think he's going to get in. I think it won't be close. He's going to get maybe a Democrat or two, but we need Kash. We need him now. It's probably the most screwed up agency we have in the government. They're all screwed up, but even this one, even more. But we need to get him in. We need to get the people behind him, his deputy and the people are going to work with him too. There's a long list of things he'll have to do once he gets in. So it's not going to just happen overnight. He's going to be able to clean up the FBI.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be a process, and I'm worried about him being stonewalled by all the corruption in there. Coach, why did the FBI get so bad? You mentioned it's one of the worst, if not the worst. It sure seems that way to me, but why that organization in particular?
Politics. We got more people that were involved in politics, involved in the FBI. What happened is Barack Obama, he took over the FBI back during his day. He took out the top 30, 40 people that were actually former FBI agents running the bureau and put in bureaucrats. And it just went downhill from there. So it has just been infiltrated over the last 10, 12 years, maybe even longer than that. But again, we've got to get people in the FBI that understand investigation, want to work with our agencies across the country to put people in jail if they've broken the law. But right now, it's a total disaster.
Yeah, it sure is. Coach, why the delay? The people on the outside looking in, they don't understand how the Senate works, what the procedural problems are. Obviously, everyone's desperate. I know you're desperate. Get Cash Patel in there. Why is he not in there yet? Why was this not, 24 hours after Trump put his hand on the good book?
Well, it's because you have to go through a procedure. He had to go through the Judiciary Committee. Then there's so many days that you have to wait before you can bring him to the floor. And then once you get to the floor, you had people in line. But again, I would hope he'd have got in last week, but it's probably just a week a little late. But again, better late than never. He's the perfect person for the job. He'll get it done. And he hadn't been doing anything behind the scenes in terms of his job, but he is making plans the day one that he gets in. He's going to hit the ground running.
Yeah, I'd hate to be a corrupt agent. Okay, let's shift gears here because Doge is all in the news right now, exposing just some of the most horrific rot inside the federal government. Even cynics like me who just assume the feds are blowing all my money. You wake up every day and you're shocked at the things our money's going to. But the Pentagon cometh. That audit is going to be an ugly one, and I think the American people are going to be... They thought they were mad about USAID. I think the Pentagon audit is going to open some eyes to what's gone on in this country.
Yeah, the Pentagon, the IRS, there's a lot of agencies that are really going to, I think, be outed in terms of how they've spent the taxpayers' money for years, not just the last couple of years. But again, it all goes back to we have so many bloated agencies in this country. We have so many bureaucrats, people that really don't do their job. It's just to look at the IRS. I mean, they have weaponized themselves against a lot of Republicans across this country. So it's a total disaster.
Coach, I did not expect yesterday to wake up and see that Fort Knox was somehow in the news and somehow a source of controversy. Apparently now people are wondering if there's actually gold still in the place. What is the controversy? Is there one with Fort Knox? Did Bob Menendez take all the gold bars?
It's so secretive that everybody's just kind of hanging back and kind of wondering if there is really gold there. I would imagine it is. I've heard some people that actually saw the gold a few years ago. But again, I would love for somebody like Rand Paul to have the opportunity to put his eyes on it and squash this this mystery. But again, you just never know about this country. Who would have ever thought that we were shipping out trillions of dollars to across this country to people that supposedly had paid into Social Security, but they're living in other countries that are 350 years old. It's a disaster.
Yeah, it is a disaster. All right, let's shift gears to something that near and dear to your heart. I know we talked a little bit about the Pentagon, but the military itself, the rot, which really in large part began under Obama, surprise, surprise, it's very, very deep, Coach. And I know Pete Hegseth is doing great work so far, but there's a lot to clean out there. How's the clean out going? You did the best you could under Biden to fight for some semblance of sanity, but there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we fought back every day, and we saw it, and we've seen it coming in terms of recruiting all the DEI woke social justice nonsense that they're pushing on our young men and women that actually want to fight for this country. We've got to start with leadership in the Pentagon, and Pete Hegseth knows that, and he's working very hard. We're trying to get his people confirmed that are going to work underneath him. He's going to need more help. He can't do it by himself. But again, it's just something that's been sticking out there. Everybody's been able to see it. Nobody's fought back against it.
Finally, let's talk about Chinese farmland, Iranian farmland, North Korean farmland right here in the U.S. of A. It's astounding to a lot of people that this is something we allow at all, but apparently you're trying to put a stop to this?
Oh, yeah. It's called FLOB. It's a bill that we put out to just try to educate people and understand what's going on. My state of Alabama alone is number third in the country of farmland. It's owned by foreign entities. Now, it's not just China. It's North Korea, Russia, a lot of other people across the world have bought into our farmland. But the thing about it is there's land that are very close to our bases, military bases, all across the country. And a lot of those are Chinese. So we got to keep an eye on this. And again, it just, if you don't stop it when it first starts, then people forget about it. It gets out of control, just like all these other agencies, and you have huge problems at the end of the day trying to get it back in, under control and back in the way we should have it.
No doubt. Coach, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. Chi-coms are mad at us already. I know Stephen Yates is going to be doing backflips about that. We'll talk to him about it next. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you about getting a good night's sleep. Do you want to feel rested? Do you want to feel good at work? Maybe so you can perform the way you should, not just running out of gas in 30 seconds, but actually performing the way you should. Is that how you want to feel? Dream Powder from Beam can do that for you. Every night, you can sleep like a little baby naturally. That's the difference. There's a million things that'll put you to sleep. I know that. Dream Powder from Beam is a cup of hot chocolate with natural things in it. You'd never know it to sip it. It's just a delicious cup of hot chocolate. You knock out like a little baby, wake up feeling great the next day. Sound good? Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Okay, let's talk about China, because this is going to be a subject, as you might imagine, that is going to be on our minds for the 4 years of the Trump presidency. Apparently, they are already upset with us. They want Taiwan. Trump's challenging them. We have tariff talk. All this stuff is too confusing for me. We better bring in Stephen Yates to talk about it. National security expert with the wonderful Heritage Foundation always makes us a little bit smarter. Okay, Steve, why are the Chi-coms mad at us already?
Well, because they are who they are is the short answer. But really, there is this really strange thing that I think no normal American would ever pay attention to, and that's a fact sheet on the State Department website where it had some text on there that was edited by someone we don't know that added a phrase that we don't support Taiwan independence. It's something that Galaxy Brains and the Beltway have bandied around for a long time. But then that was deleted and put in place instead that we oppose unilateral use of force or coercion. That coercion word is getting after all the pressure tactics that China has tried to put in place that look like a blockade or otherwise in recent times. And the Prime Minister of Japan and Prime Minister of India have supported this new language. So lo and behold, the State Department fact sheet changed that too. And the Mandarins in Beijing's Puzzle Palace decided that was too far and they needed to warn us against fanning the flames of Taiwan independence.
Okay, first of all, let's talk about the coercion they're doing. It seems like every single morning you wake up and you see some Chinese naval vessel is brushed up against a fishing boat in Taiwan. What exactly are they doing over there?
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. And it's not just Taiwan. They've got their fishing vessels or Coast Guard-like vessels that are blasting massive hoses at innocent bystanders who are in their own sovereign waters in the Philippines, southern Japan. But yes, there's aircraft that have been buzzing close to Taiwan's airspace. They've launched missiles over in landing zones that are not far from Taiwan, and all these vessels keep approaching and encroaching. It's meant to just sort of have slow simmering terror effect on the people of Taiwan, where they might beg for mercy and take a bad deal. So far, they haven't reached for that option. I don't think they will, but the pressure continues. It violates rules and norms that Beijing, of course, laughingly says that it wants to uphold in the international rules-based order.
Okay, so we've talked about this before, you and I, and it does get confusing because our policy seems to be intentionally confusing when it comes to Taiwan. When they stop doing, or I should say if, God forbid, they stop doing the I'm not touching you thing that like they're doing right now, what if they happen to start landing amphibious vehicles on the shore and we have a combined arms exercise where the Chinese divisions are storming into Taiwan? What are we going to do?
Well, according to policy as we've had it for decades, we should be arming them in a timely basis to have an adequate self-defense capability. Now, our supply chains have not been what they should be, and our timelines for manufacturing are way off, and the Beltway bandits have been pocketing billions, if not trillions of dollars to deliver things late. And so deterrence isn't what it should be on Taiwan's part, but our policy should be that we've sold them enough that they have the capability to deter that from happening, and then we would come in after the initial move to try to support. Now, the United States, Japan, and maybe others are on the blocks to decide, what do we do on a quicker time horizon to intervene or not? And so that, I think, is a very different place. Americans are not hungry for another undefined entanglement. I can completely understand that. And the Japanese have their own national interests, which the prime minister made clear. I thought that helped with the president, that it should not be the U.S. standing alone. But we have got to get our house in order when it comes to our defense supply chains, get them strategically decoupled from China, for heaven's sake, and make sure that we're delivering things on time that matter. And if we're not able to, help our allies do more. South Korea and Japan and India and others can do a lot more to fill this space, and that's better than it being a binary thing between the U.S. and China.
Steve, what are, quote, things that matter? I hate to nerd out on the details, but I geek out on things like this. How does an island like Taiwan, how can it possibly defend itself against a juggernaut like China, even to slow it down? What are we talking about? Missile defense? What is it?
Well, there's a lot of things that would fill in the blank, and there are better minds than mine that could probably do a better job of filling in that blank. But there's just some simple lessons learned from the Ukraine experience. Land war is different than taking an island that's 100 miles offshore. But it's also an important reminder that in many ways it's easier to defend and thwart what's coming at you than it is to attack, secure, and control another territory. So all those things that are capabilities, whether it's surface to air, drones, and other kinds of vessels that are undersea, surface, and air that can complicate things for China. But we shouldn't limit it to just the things that people consider to be defensive. I mean, if your life is being threatened, your livelihood's being threatened, targets on the mainland should be fair game. And Taiwan should be developing and is developing capabilities to strike the mainland in ways that would make it so that there's some pain to be felt if there's a kind of an attack. But the U.S. and allies should be doing more in the financial services side of things, too, to make it clear that should this balloon go up, that Chinese money will be seized anywhere in the international financial system, that China's banks will be immediately insolvent, and the whole host of measures that we have that really haven't been put onto the table by the white glove diplomat talks we've had for the last few decades.
Steve, House panel just released a report on Chinese espionage documenting more than 60 ops, 20 states in this country. Now, spy lovers like me believe that's all James Bond stuff, but of course that's not the case. What kind of ops are these? What are they doing here?
Well, this is tip of the iceberg stuff. Now, so, Jesse, if you've got an unlimited population and you've got a massive program to indoctrinate and train and then deploy people to other countries and have them go in as students and researchers or working in an investment house or other seemingly innocuous things, then they can also engage in community organization, I think was Barack Obama's euphemism for how communists organize to influence American politics, you'd have groups that are in New York, LA, other major cities that look like they're just celebrating their Chinese-ness, but what they're really doing is tracking and harassing dissidents, soaking up any gaps in open source information, which is to say people who might have access to sensitive information, they go walk off their jobs, you make nice with them, they spill the beans over a beer or a meal or give them a promise of a nice trip somewhere. All of these kinds of compromising efforts have been going on for decades, but they've really picked up pace in recent years. Some of them have been exposed, like in New York, the person who was really close to Governor Hochul and was based out of New York City. We've had the driver for Dianne Feinstein that was there for 20 years, seemingly. But it's really amped up in recent years. And we've just been very bad as Americans. And the Chinese Communist Party is really good at saying, well, if you go after me being a bad communist spy, you're really just racist. And Americans go, ooh, I don't want to be called that. So maybe I just let this person compromise my institutions.
How much of this do you feel is American politicians possibly being in bed with the Chinese? It's hard not to think about a Chinese spy balloon that had American tech inside of it, starting in Alaska, the Biden administration finding out about it and allowing it to simply traverse the entire country, collect all that data before they shoot it down over the Atlantic. When I'm on the outside looking in at that, Steve, it looks to me like a president who's been compromised by the communist Chinese. It just does.
Yeah, well, there's a huge quotient of this that I put up there with ignorance and incompetence, but there is definitely a segment of this that is compromise. When you start throwing around millions of dollars in private accounts for family members, that is textbook compromise when you're working in intelligence and counterintelligence. And so you don't get these no-show jobs or massive balloons in family accounts with the expectation that you just want to send nice holiday letters and go to good receptions. It means when it matters, you're going to make something easily available to me. We don't have hard evidence on where that went. And as it went into that stupid balloon situation, that was a horrific humiliation that we allowed that to just float over and spend millions of dollars to shoot in the Atlantic. But that compromise is a very, very real part of this. That's what the New York stuff was with money close to politicians. There are several ethnic Chinese people. Again, we're not ethnically profiling, but the Communist Party sure does. And they go and they bring donations to get access. And access to do what? This is a real effect in our system. We've got to get better at recognizing it and building firewalls against it.
All right, finally, Steve, before I let you go, Russia, Ukraine, are we at the beginning of the end of all this? Trump administration appears to want to wrap this thing up. I have no earthly idea how long wrapping it up will take, but is this the beginning of the end?
I believe it is. There's a lot of momentum moving in that direction, although I would not want to underestimate how hard it is to stop these kinds of things. I mean, this has been 3 years of a grinding war of attrition, and it's going to take a lot to have a verified halt of hostilities, figure out what happens with land that was taken, and is there some kind of peacekeeping? What are the Europeans going to do for other Europeans? What other powers are going to do things so the United States is not everyone's first and most 911 call for a bailout? I mean, there's still a lot to work out. But what the Trump administration is doing is definitely not isolationism. It's like half the National Security Cabinet is out there in the world in pursuit of this peace.
Well, let's hope they get it done. Steve, thank you, brother. Appreciate it, as always. All right. Apparently someone's leaking to the news that Central Intelligence agencies flying drones over the cartels. What's happening out there? What's happening in Mexico? Todd Bensman joins us to talk about that in just a moment. Before Todd joins us, let's talk about getting your expenses done easier. sucks doing those expenses, doesn't it? Chasing them down. Do you have the receipt? Check your email. I know what you go through. And you have to figure out how do you properly categorize things. Stop going through that. The Ramp corporate card is here. It's a corporate card that does it for you. How much would you save? How much of your time, your energy, money would you save if you didn't have to do these horrible expense reports? Go get a Ramp corporate card. And now, for a limited time, listeners of this show can get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/Jesse. That's ramp.com/Jesse. Cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Well, we live in the social media era, the information era, I guess you could call it, and sometimes it's hard to know. What are you supposed to know? What are you supposed to believe? How many media leaks are supposed to happen? How many are just some idiot in the government running his mouth? Why are we sending Reaper drones over Mexico? Joining me now to talk about many of these things, Todd Benzman, fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies, love them very much, author of the book Overrun. Okay, Todd, somebody told CNN that we're flying drones over the cartels in Mexico. Is this one of those, well, we wanted them to know, or is this one of those we have a leaky ship in the Central Intelligence Agency, which would be the least surprising things in the world? What is it?
Well, I can't say for sure, but we definitely know from at least the Mexicans who were complaining about this briefly and saying, hey, listen, we didn't give them permission to be over our territory, or that some of them were permitted, but others were not, that sort of thing. So we do have the Mexicans talking about it, and maybe they just want to start doing some, we want to start doing some psyops on the cartels. Let them know that, you know, we're coming after them in some way, that they should start looking over a shoulder, maybe start watching out for themselves and be nervous. And it's not just the drones, the spy planes, but it's also, you know, the Green Berets just were sent down there to start training Mexican naval infantry in unconventional warfare. And you know, we're starting to put naval assets on the Gulf of America off the coast there for the first time. We're doing a lot of things that we haven't done in a while. It seems like we're setting the table for something. And the context of that is Trump says we're going to wipe them out. And they're using sort of hyperbolic language about what we're going to do, that we're going to go kinetic. And that's the big context to all this, including troubling down on the CIA operations down there. So that's a big Washington Post story out today.
Todd, talk to me about the Mexicans and the cartels, because it's unsurprising that we get a lot of mixed messaging, as you just kind of pointed out, from the Mexican side of it. Now, we're looking forward to working with this administration. We will not work with this administration. We, of course, will smash the cartels. Hold on, we never said we'd sign up for this. Exactly what help can we expect from this government?
Well, the Mexican government under Claudia Sheinbaum adopted the prior president's policy toward the cartel, which, and I'm not making this up, was hugs, not bullets. In other words, we're just going to let you operate unless occasionally it's inconvenient for us and we have to go in and pick somebody up. But for the most part, you're free to make as much money as you want. We'll leave you alone if you leave us alone and maybe pay us. But the Trump administration isn't down with that. The Trump administration wants bullets, not hugs. And if the Mexican government doesn't like that, you know, we put a 25% tariff in place with Trump's finger hovering over that button. If you don't, and that'll send them into recession right away. So they're under the gun, so to speak, the Mexican government, to do what Trump, to change their own policy so that their economy doesn't suffer. That's why you're getting yet this and then that and then this and then that, because they really don't want to go up against the cartels. It's hard to do that. But we are going to make them do it. We're coercing them into doing it. And that's kind of what the problem is there, why we're getting confusion.
Todd, how concerned are you, because you know a lot more about this stuff than I do, how concerned are you about what kind of an operation this would be? You know, the average American, understandably, I'm not insulting them, thinks the cartels are all up in cartel headquarters at some fancy hacienda, and I've seen Clear and Present Danger, you just drop a bomb on it and they're all dead, of course, but that is not how it works in real life. Very similar to other places we've been, they are ingrained in many of these communities where they operate. They are not in one central warehouse, very scary looking. They're ingrained. How do we uningrain them, for lack of a better term?
It's true. The cartels are what we call a wicked homeland security problem. Very, very difficult to just simply destroy them militarily. Hundreds of thousands of Mexicans work for the cartels in various kind of roles. The Mexican economy is, you know, dependent on a lot of that drug trade and human smuggling trade. The Sinaloa cartel has 60,000 employees by one report. And so it's not going to be easy to just wipe them out. And furthermore, under the administration of President Felipe Calderon from 2006 through about 2012, they waged all-out military war. They tried with everything they had to wipe out those cartels, and they got their butts kicked and withdrew. And as a result, we got hugs, not bullets, as a policy, 200,000 Mexican dead. I think that the way this is going to, I think that the way this is going to go down, and by the way, the drug smuggling never stopped during any of that. So it's not, that is a wicked problem. I think that military action is going to maybe suppress some things. It's going to, you know, it's maybe it might be better than nothing. Maybe the cartels will give up fentanyl, and as long as they can keep sending the rest of the drugs over, maybe just not fentanyl. That seems to be what the Americans are worried about. I think that the way it'll play out, if I have another second here, is kind of like we'll use the Mexican army and military as our proxy for any kinetic action. But they're going to have CIA support, American military intelligence support, maybe weaponry, aircraft. We'll be behind the scenes, advisors, like in Colombia for years and years, where we backed a war against the FARC, which was a major cocaine smuggling cartel down there. Ultimately, it was successful, but it took decades. So I think we'll see, if we see anything, it'll be something like that. And one last thing, there is a possibility that if there is kinetic action down there, I mean military action by the Mexicans with U.S. under U.S. pressure, that the cartels could attack us on our soil, on our side, shoot at Border Patrol, take out some American military personnel down there or something in retaliation. And in that case, they're moving in some pretty serious military forces. The 10th Mountain Division has just arrived, 500 of them, light infantry in Fort Huachuca in Arizona. We mean business outfit, fully armed and equipped with all their weaponry and spy planes and everything else. So I think that's intended maybe to deter any kind of attack on U.S. soil.
Yeah. The boys at the Tent Mountain are very, very serious individuals. That is for sure. So that tells you we mean business. I've been to Fort Huachuca, actually. Todd, that was awesome. Come back soon, brother. We'll riff on this some more. Interesting. It's not going to be clean. Okay. That was all I was trying to convey, and I hope Todd brought that home with his expertise. It's not easy. It's not clean. You know, you don't just send in the SEALs to take them out. That's stuff from the movies. We're talking large scale. This is a war. It would be a war. It would be Afghanistan. Something to keep in mind. All right, we have Light in the Mood. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And I love watching communists embarrass themselves. And Mark Hamill is one of those fascinating people where everyone knows his face because everyone watched Star Wars. Everybody has seen Star Wars. Nobody can name a single other movie he's ever been in, yet he's parlayed that popularity from Star Wars into being the most obnoxious, outspoken, moronic communist in Hollywood, which is actually saying something. So I did enjoy this video quite a bit.
So what makes us love cinema so much that we're all gathered here to celebrate tonight? For me, it's that films create worlds so vivid and stories so powerful that we lose ourselves in them completely. They create immersive cinematic landscapes that feel alive, whether they're set here in London or anywhere. It's that films create worlds so vivid and stories so powerful that we lose ourselves in them completely. They create immersive cinematic landscapes that feel alive, whether they're set here in London or anywhere.
I guess I don't understand how that can happen. Haven't you been in a place where your pants have fallen down, your shorts have fallen down? Maybe you got your phone, your keys in there. You can feel it, right? You can feel it before it happens. You can feel it. Mark Hamill can't feel it. Apparently, the force was not with him. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.